set another all-time high on Monday, with the energy sector rising after crude oil hit a 16-month high. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ also turning in impressive performances.
The bulk of the time was with President-elect Donald Trump. I found it an extremely interesting conversation to be continued. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Thank you.
He said, I love this place, referring to public life. And there was a question, are you going to run again? He said, yeah, I am. I am going to run in 2020. For what? The question. For president. And also, you know, what the hell, man? Anyway, that sounds like Biden, doesn't it?
What do we want it?
No.
If we don't get it,
shut it down.
If we don't get it,
shut it down.
If we don't get it,
shut it down.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Tuesday. It's December 6, 2016, 5:08 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell. It's another business day as we move into Tuesday. By the way, if you haven't been watching your calendar, it's T-minus 19 days until Christmas. T-minus 19 days, not much time to shop left. I'm sure you've been watching the calendar, though, so that was probably annoying on my part. I apologize. But still, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. We've had a little snow. People are out shopping. The hustle and bustle. And a lot of that is happening on Wall Street, too. Let's go first to the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are down as we head toward the opening bell, off about 4 points, 19,206 after another intraday high. Yesterday, another record high. The S&P is off a little this morning as well. The NASDAQ futures are pointing toward opening gains when the opening bell rings later on this morning. Oil is trading up just a little bit as we begin our day as well at 52.17 a barrel. Let me double check that. 51.40 now a barrel, off now about a percent, off about 39 cents. Asian stocks rose following another record day on Wall Street as investor optimism bounced back quickly after that Italian referendum. Top business leaders in South Korea were grilled by lawmakers over allegations that the president there allowed a corrupt confidant to pull government strings and extort companies. Benchmark U.S. crude oil, as I mentioned, is trading lower this morning. Major U.S. benchmarks pushed higher yesterday. The Dow gained about 45 points. We'll hear about productivity, factory, international trade, all coming today with our economic reports. In the spotlight today, as we begin our broadcast, we have been talking a little bit lately about culture in the workplace and how it's important to not only attract good employees, but keep them on hand. We're lucky to have with us today on the program one of the leading experts in this from the Purposeful Culture Group. The new book is The Culture Engine. Chris Edmonds is with us via Skype this morning. Chris, thanks first for being with us on The Opening Bell. Let me begin by asking just a very easy question, and that is, what do you mean by culture when you talk about culture?
Well, culture means many things to many people, and my definition, and it seems to ring true for a lot of senior leaders I've worked with over the past 20 years, is the way people treat each other. So it kind of gets it out of, you know, is it beliefs, is it norms, is it behaviors? I really get to the behaviors piece, because as we look at how cultures operate, we can look at financial success, we can look at, you know, how well are customers being treated, and do they have a good buzz, right, positive buzz about the company's products and services. But one of the most important metrics there is the employee engagement piece. And how well employees perceive they're being treated is all about day-to-day interactions with peers, with bosses, et cetera. So it's really about, in my view, how people treat each other.
And so when we think of this, what immediately comes to mind for me is the millennial set and having a ping pong table and having a nap room. That's probably on one of the extremes of this, isn't it? But it's sort of that, you know, feeling comfortable at work, isn't it?
It really is. And it's truly about trust, respect, dignity. And it means that you go into a meeting with ideas, if those ideas are brutally kind of addressed, but you're treated with respect. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think if we look at ideas and we look at potential and we look at opportunities and we can be kind of brutally honest on that, that can help the business, that can help your customers. However, if I feel so badly treated, demeaned, discounted, dismissed, that I'm not going to be very likely to give you my best ideas. I'm not going to be proactive about solving problems. And so that's actually not terribly different from what baby boomers want from the workplace, from what Gen Xers want from the workplace. So I agree that the millennials, they're in the spotlight. God love them. We all had our time. You know, I'm long past that. But the reality is that if you've got on-site daycare, if you've got on-site cleaners, dry cleaners, right, if you've got a healthcare center on site, but you're still being treated badly day to day, none of that other stuff matters. So I believe that the research is clear. Millennials want to be treated with respect. They love experiences, which may be a little bit, you know, different, a generational bias than some of the others. But if you find an environment that really treats others as human with dignity, at least having civil interactions, that's pretty powerful.
Chris Edmonds, the founder and CEO of Purpose Driven Culture Group, also the author of the Amazon bestseller, The Culture Engine, with us this morning via Skype. Chris, we'll take a break here for traffic and be back with our morning conversation here on the Opening Bell. So stick with us. And coming up, we'll talk more about this notion of culture in the workplace and how you can find a potential good employer with good culture. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, some stocks of local interest we're watching today. Peabody Energy up about 5.5%. Caterpillar is off about 1% this morning. CNA Financial up about 1.5%. This is the Opening Bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, the major stock indexes remain in record territory this week. The Dow picked up 45 points to close at 19,216 yesterday. The S&P 500 climbed 12 points, and the NASDAQ was ahead 53 at the close of trade. Amazon is testing a new grocery store model in Seattle. It has no checkout lines. Shoppers scan their Amazon app when they enter the store, then sensors register the items they choose and automatically debit their accounts. Right now, the store is only for Amazon employees, but it's expected to open to the public early next year. Mechanics at United Airlines have approved a 6-year contract covering more than 9,000 employees. The unions have been pushing for pay raises now that the carriers are making huge profits after losing billions. And General Mills plans to cut up to 600 jobs worldwide as it restructures its business. The Minneapolis-based company has been struggling to boost sales as customers increasingly shift to less processed and sugary foods. It's seen sales decline for 5 straight quarters. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Our pre-dawn business conversation this morning is about workplace culture and whether or not you can find one of those places. They are good places to work if you are lucky enough to get hooked up with one. Business is also learning, too, that this is the way to go in the future to not only attract but keep good employees. Chris Edmonds is with us this morning via Skype. He's the founder and CEO of Purpose Driven Culture Group. The new book is an Amazon bestseller, The Culture Engine. Chris, the companies that are getting involved in this, and these are just not mom and pop companies either, they're bigger companies, they're finding this really doesn't cost a whole lot. Hardly anything at all, right?
You're exactly right. They really don't. And you start to look at, you know, let's get 20 senior leaders in a room. Let's talk about what it would take to boost your results by 30%. And they look at you like you're from another planet. It's like, we would kill for 2%, right? Or 3% or whatever, depending on the market and the environment, the industry, et cetera. And really, all you have to do is to trust people, right? Now, you may not want to trust everybody, but everyone has to have the same rules where we have the interests of the customer in mind. At the same time, we have the interests of our stakeholders, kind of the sustainability of our business in mind. But we also want employees to feel trusted, honored, and respected. And that does take some time and energy. It really doesn't cost a lot of money. What it takes is for leaders to realize that everything they say helps, hurts, or hinders the relationship they have with employees. And if you quit doing the dumb stuff that hurts and hinders, you just might have a better culture there.
Chris, whenever as a reporter I go out and talk to people who've just been laid off in a mass layoff as a company has forced to do that, they always tell me shareholder value is killing the American workplace. Would you agree with that?
You know, I think it's a very interesting dynamic, and that's why I kind of use that three-legged stool idea of employee engagement, right? Stakeholder value from a standpoint of results and profits, and the customer experience. I think all three of those are equally important. What we certainly found going into the recession and coming out of the recession was that that shareholder value got everything. And if we look at Wall Street, there's some very cool things that come of the Wall Street focus and influence of Western thinking. And that's not just the U.S., that's globally. But that's a very dollars and cents kind of focus. And that's not the only output that leaders have to be concerned about. If we think about our best bosses, we think about the experiences that we had in organizations where I really felt honored and I gave my best, it wasn't about the stock price. It wasn't exclusively about the stakeholders getting their ROI. If we create a sustainable company that that customers love, then and we got to A, have really good products, B, have them priced right, and we have employees that feel trusted, honored, respected. Now we've got something there. And so I think you're right. The idea of organizations that because of the economy, the demands on the business, because of the stakeholders' requirements, I think it's that exclusive focus to the detriment of employee engagement and customer service takes precedence, then that organization is probably not going to thrive for a long time. It'll be maybe a short time. But the companies that we really love, we still talk about Nordstrom, right? We talk about Ritz-Carlton. We talk about organizations like Starbucks. Starbucks got away from their culture, and it cost them money. Their stakeholders were not happy. And Howard Schultz came back and injected himself back into the Starbucks organization by saying, I'm sorry, we got too focused on the numbers and the returns, and I'm going to take us back to the neighborhood coffee house that really was the foundation of our business. And in the last 5 years, they've done that very well and gotten terrific results. So again, I don't want to discount stakeholders. They do a lot of cool things. But to have any one of those take exclusive precedence is not going to help the organization thrive.
Whenever you go in and do one of your presentations to the Fortune 50 companies or any companies, is there any time this doesn't work? When it fails?
Yeah, there really is. One of the most interesting things, because I hope you can smell the passion that I have for this, because our workplaces are mostly not very fun, they're not very productive, and we have people that spend more time in the workplaces than they do with their best friends and their family members that they love. So if we can start to look at creating an organization where people really do feel valued, then some really cool things happen. And the thing that has to change is the dynamic of power and control. It's the dynamic of the boss being all-knowing. And in essence, the real root of this kind of a culture shift of getting values being as important as results and being focused on behaviors that really ensure civility and, God forbid, validation. If leaders feel like they have to be in control, they have to be in charge, they have to be right, that's not a servant leadership mindset. And the only way that we've found this change take hold is when leaders realize that their whole job is to craft an environment where people feel trusted, honored, respected, to do the right things for the customer. And if a leader can't embrace, get their arms around the fact that the only way this is really going to work is if you are seen as serving others, it'll never take hold.
Chris, let me ask you this from an employee standpoint, because I think a lot of people are going to be brushing off their resumes as we head to the new year. What can they look for in that interview to know that they're getting into the right culture?
Oh, boy, that's a great question. First of all, I really am a huge, huge believer in the fact that as an employee looking for a potential opportunity with any organization, small business, large, multinational, government office, doesn't matter, you got to be as interested in interviewing them as they are interviewing you. So you've got to have some qualities that you're looking for. And I really tell employees, I tell leaders that are considering going to work for a company, I said, go to glassdoor.com. In the old days, it used to be, this probably, I'm dating myself, 8 years ago, disgruntled.com was the place where employees would say, oh my God, this is the worst person to work for on the planet, right? And so to some extent, Glassdoor is doing this in a much more professional way, where you can go in and see how many people are satisfied working there? Are the benefits seen as fair? Is the leadership aligned? And one of the other questions that I just love is, do they believe that the CEO is doing a good job? And so I say, you better go out and do some research. And if you have friends or, God forbid, just acquaintances who work there, go ask them what it's like. What does this organization really value? You know, do they value their customers? Do they value the almighty dollar, right? Do they value the employees? Because I'm convinced that, you know, a lot of things happen in interviews and they go by fast and you're thinking, what exactly did I sign up for? And you really probably won't know until you live in a culture for a couple of months. And sometimes by then it's too late. So I tell employees all the time, be very intentional about what you're looking for. Dig and dig deep and then pick from a bunch of stars and you can't miss.
Chris, thank you for helping improve our work culture, and best of luck to you. Great conversation.
Steve, thanks so much for the opportunity. Very much appreciate it.
Chris Edmonds is the founder and CEO of Purpose Driven Culture Group, also the author of the Amazon bestseller, The Culture Engine. And you can follow him on Twitter at SCE Edmonds. SC Edmonds, I should say. SC Edmonds, Chris Edmonds. And you can find out more about his book at DrivingResultsThroughCulture.com. It's 5:27 on the opening bell. In the newsroom, Vic Vaughn is standing by. Good morning, Vic.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Coming up, why a militant neo-Nazi group is being investigated by campus police in Chicago. That report next.
This is the opening bell.
From ABC News Tech Trends, educating teenagers about internet dangers.
It's kind of a wake-up call.
A number of law enforcement agencies recently gathered in Los Angeles with one purpose.
To educate middle and high school age kids on how to be safe on the internet.
FBI Special Agent Ronald Slagle at the 8th Annual Cybercrime Prevention Symposium. The biggest issue for teens online, according to Lieutenant Andrea Grossman, underage nude selfies.
They think it's going to be personal, and then when they break up, it goes all over and it becomes viral.
During the symposium, 300 students, parents, and teachers took part in lectures and workshops. Isaiah Dolphin was one of them.
If I'm going to comment on something, I should really like check what I'm writing so I can make sure I'm not offending someone or susceptible to cyberbullying myself.
And Agent Slagle has this piece of advice for parents.
Find out who they're talking to online, what type of social media accounts that they have, if they're gamers, what types of games they're playing online.
With Tech Trends, I'm Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:38, this Tuesday edition of the opening bell. At the opening of the broadcast, I reminded you that it is T-minus 19 days and counting until Christmas. Not a lot of time to do your holiday purchases, but whatever you do, don't make emotional holiday purchases. It could cost you a lot. A Purdue University professor has been studying this, and he joins us this morning on the news line from West Lafayette, Indiana, Lala Tiendu Acharya. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks for being with us this morning. So is this when you maybe are in love with somebody and you go out and buy a diamond ring for Christmas, or you just feel emotional of the holidays and overspend?
You know, emotions come in different ways. And like you said, you know, when we buy different things, emotions happen in a context, and the purchases happen in a context, right?
Well, I think so. That's why I mentioned the diamond ring, because there is a context for that. But there's also a context for, oh, I love the holidays and I just want to buy everybody everything.
Exactly. I mean, some of us talk ourselves into buying stuff which costs a lot of money, and then we don't realize that we have to make those payments over the coming months, or that much money is out of our account.
So your study and research here in the Department of Consumer Science there at Purdue has found that what I guess a lot of people have always thought, and that is that financial literacy and human emotions don't always go together. How costly can this be?
Oh, this can be. I don't have any specific research evidence or empirical evidence to cite right now, but then the review figures show us that. This can end people in bankruptcy and financial ruin. You know, sometimes not a lot of people are in the category in which there's a lot of disposable income, because the majority of Americans, our incomes are tied up in mortgage payments, in other payments that we have bought in to fill that house. And then whatever little money we have, so let's say suddenly we have unaccounted for unforeseen health expense, then everything goes out of the window, and we really have to struggle after that.
So I'm guessing that this the holiday purchases, your holiday budget, if you will, if you look at it that way, is something that should be well thought out. What would your advice be?
Well, absolutely, Steve. Absolutely. My advice would be, you know, as research shows us and evidence shows us, that you try to do a budget, try to operate in the budget, and like you correctly said, look at the context in which you're making the purchase. And you mentioned financial literacy. Everybody should develop some financial literacy, but we must understand that we are not calculated for computers. I mean, we can be better than them, but we bring in our values, beliefs, our fears, you know, our love and affection, all these into the purchase decision. So when we make a budget, we should keep these things in mind.
And financial literacy, too, is about more than hitting the calculator keys. It's knowing what you're getting yourself into. Like, for instance, a good example would be, what, a store credit card. When you sign up for one of those, you better know that it's going to have a huge interest rate. Is that what you're talking about financial literacy?
Part of it, yes. And typically, when we talk about literacy, I may say that my research shows that we treat these terms like financial literacy, health literacy, as very functional terms. We unfortunately forget the context, the values, the culture, everything behind it. I mean, for example, financial literacy. We are a very diverse society in the United States. And all of us, we have different, you know, values and beliefs and culture. So we have a different view of financial literacy. In our research, what factors this into the calculations? And that's what creates the problem when you see the outcome. People, even if they're claimed to be financially literate, they probably spent more than the budget. They probably gone over the. They probably didn't see the high cost of a credit card that they used to make the purchase.
We sometimes don't think past the holidays when it comes to buying gifts either. I remember when I was a kid, my parents always used to do the best for us as children and make sure we had lots of presents under the tree. But I remember as I got older, seeing them struggle after the holidays. This is something that if you do the wrong thing will last you well into the year or beyond, isn't it?
Yes, sir. And that's why retirement planning, when it takes place late, is a problem. And you find that you have kept on spending, basically on this thing. At the end of the day, you haven't planned for retirement. And that's the issue that many Americans face today.
What are the worst stories that you've heard of? I mean, does this sometimes contribute to bankruptcy or worse?
It does, Steve. It does. And I have come across this, and we have undergoing research lines. We are looking at this. We are looking at this kind of experiences. And this becomes more and more evident when we also look at the rising healthcare costs in this country. I mean, with a family deductible of $5,000 and a monthly salary of $6,500, you really can afford to spend that much on holidays and that much expenses going by your emotions, you know, just to satisfy your emotions. What we're targeting into this, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, and the stores sort of are complicit in this because it seems like every year we start earlier and earlier with Christmas ads and that sort of stuff.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And even the system is oriented right now towards our society. The system is oriented towards driving us towards making purchases, you know. We have all these events, Christmas holidays, Black Friday, Cyber Monday. Then Alibaba has come out with a Singles Day, you know, in which they have, like, sold 10 billion. Online purchases are going more. I just have to click a button on my cell phone and the purchase is made. So society, our structures are in a certain way driving us to spend more and more. So in this environment, we have to be much more careful and much more cognizant of the actions we are taking financially. Otherwise, we'll end up in bankruptcy or end up in a huge financial stress.
So, Professor, it's kind of late now to get a budget going because it's so close to Christmas, 19 days, I believe. Can you give us some of the pitfalls or maybe some of the big road mines or landmines that are out there that we should avoid this close to Christmas as we do our holiday shopping without a budget?
You know, the first thing that comes to my mind, I mean, there could be many. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is don't get carried away by many lines which say that spend $1 today, to get the high-ticket item. If I spend $1 today, I mean, let's talk about the iPhone 7. The iPhone 7 is something around $850. And it's like $1 per day. So as if I spend $1 per day and think it's affordable, I do not realize that I'm spending $800 over the next 12 or 18 months. So we have to be careful of these things, in which we should not get carried away by these calculations, by these marketing lines that the companies tell us.
Yeah, sort of like those interest-free deals or the long-term credit payments, those sorts of things?
Yes, sir, because there is nothing free in life. Everything has a cost.
So give us a sense of after, let's say we do go overboard here and spend too much for Christmas, what would your advice be after the holidays? Immediately cut things from other budgets to pay off this Christmas bill as fast as possible?
My advice would be to take stock of how much you've spent and how does it factor into your expenses over the next year or the next 6 months, if that may be, because people live in different situations and have different income scenarios. So how much have you spent and how much you think you can factor it into your expenses in the coming months would be a great thing. You know, that will give you kind of a assessment of where you are and where you stand. And so because you have made the expense, now start controlling the other things. Exactly. Yeah. See, once you have made an expense, that much money is out of our disposable income, whether in a future value or in a present tense. So that means I have my disposable income is less that much amount. So I have to make do over the next time period with the money available to me. And that's something which is which we should all realize.
Lala Tiendu Acharya, assistant professor in the Department of Consumer Sciences at Purdue University. Professor, thanks for being with us. Have a good holiday.
Thank you. You too. And spend wisely.
All right. Thank you very much. 547. This is The Opening Bell.
On 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 551. Before we check the numbers here from the WGN Chicago Weather Center, a dense fog advisory has just been issued for the entire Chicago area until 11 o'clock this morning. Visibility down to 1/4 mile or less, with widely varying visibility and improving conditions only toward daybreak later. But we're seeing impacts of this, including this freezing fog, perhaps, and also the reduced visibility over much of the area down again to 1/4 mile or less. This includes the cities of Rockford, Belvedere, Woodstock, Oregon, Aurora, Elgin, Wheaton, Chicago, Oswego, Morris, and Joliet. Again, from the WGN Chicago Weather Center, a dense fog advisory has just been issued until 11 o'clock this morning for the entire area, including the Chicago Metro. Let's get the latest now from the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures are up 7 points. The NASDAQ futures and S&P futures are higher as well. Now, the latest on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve, and good morning to soybean producers. Pretty good day yesterday at the Chicago Board of Trade. Futures up 1.5%. That put an end to a four-session decline. Healthy overseas demand and, again, rallies in Asian oilseed markets helped that market yesterday. Gains in soybeans spilled over into corn and wheat markets as well. So we ended higher across the board. The December wheat contract gained 3.5 cents. The December corn contract was up 10.75. And January soybeans gained 15.75 cents. We also had a pretty good day in livestock trade, particularly the lean hog contracts. They hit a 1.5 month high, spurred by expectations for stronger near-term cash prices. And as we look at those numbers, the December lean hog contract gained 90 cents, the December live cattle contract down 15 cents, and the January feeder cattle contract up just a dime. The Illinois Farm Bureau winds up its annual convention at the Palmer House in Chicago today. Meanwhile, a couple of other state conventions getting underway this week. Today, the Iowa Farm Bureau will begin its annual convention in Des Moines, And on the 8th of December, the Indiana Farm Bureau will begin its convention in Fort Wayne. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Right back at you, Orion. 5:54 now on the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Tuesday, December 6, 2016. The Commerce Department releases its report on international trade in goods and services. The Business Roundtable Quarterly CEO Economic Outlook Survey. The CEOs of approximately 210 leading U.S. companies give their expectations for the short-term economic outlook of the country. Finance ministers from European Union gather today. Foreign ministers from NATO also gathering for a two-day meeting today. The Grammy Award nominations are announced today. That will not necessarily drive the markets, but it's interesting as well. It's a good milepost as we move into the winter events. And also Pearl Harbor events are starting to kick into full gear ahead of the 75th anniversary of the Pearl Harbor attack on tomorrow, December 7th. Just some of the things that could drive the markets today on the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, December 6th. We'll continue to follow your money throughout the morning right here on 720 WGN and in the Steve Cochran Show coming up next. And we'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning with another edition of The Opening Bell. Until then, I'm Steve Krasanich. Have a great day.